Welcome to Plant Spirit Awakening. Plant Spirit Awakening, awakening the planet through conscious exploration of shamanic plant medicines from around the world.
Let's just, I just want to just break in just for a moment and ask your opinion. I've asked you this before, but not on in this interview. What is your feeling about doing ayahuasca on your own, maybe with a sitter, in a sacred setting, but not with the guidance of a shaman, but say you have the brew, maybe, because I know there are some shamans that even will sell the brew to people.
Really? I didn't know that.
Yeah. My question is, what is your feeling about that?
Well, if you'd asked me this before the dieta, I would have said never, ever. Because for me, the power of the shaman doing the work is an integral part of the experience. Now, I did speak to someone attending the dieta who is a huge fan of Don Diego's and works with him whenever he can. He'll even fly to different cities just to go to his ceremonies, actually. He's that, you know, impressed with Don Diego. But this guy also mail orders ayahuasca out of Peru, which, you know, is technically not legal, but, you know, they put it in a discreet package and it comes in. And he also feels that it helps him to do the work either, you know, usually with someone, but he's done it enough times that he sometimes actually does it by himself too.
Okay.
But he is also the first to admit that his solo work with ayahuasca or, you know, without a shaman present work doesn't even begin to compare to the power of working with Don Diego or a great shaman.
Yeah.
So I can't. You know, I'm at this point in the process of questioning my own attitude toward that. I can't speak from experience. I've never taken ayahuasca without a shaman present. And right now I feel no urge to do so, but I'm not going to speak out of turn. I actually asked Don Diego that question. Could I do ayahuasca on my own?
Yeah.
And we had already had that second ceremony where the woman had the multiple personalities pop out and was raving and pounding the ground and just kind of out of her mind for a while. And he said, well, what would you do if that happened? And it was a sobering question, because even if you had a sitter, you know, and you face something so intense that it momentarily, you know, for a while wigs you out, you know, are you going to be safe? Are you going to be able to handle it? So,
What would you have done for your own self if you had had that? I believe it was the second session where you had to have the water poured over your head.
The fourth, actually, yeah.
Could you have done that on that session on your own, do you think? Would you have gotten through it?
I have no idea. I'm sure I would have gotten through it. I mean, to my knowledge, no one's ever died taking ayahuasca. And I probably would have got through it, I would hope, but I might have been traumatized. And, you know, I know that I needed Don Diego's help in that ceremony. He came over and did a lot of work on me. And usually, in a typical session, the shaman does not approach you personally, at least with Don Diego. You know,
I noticed that.
Yeah, and he doesn't need to, because you're already blended, and he can do a lot of work on you from where he's sitting at the front of the room and never need to approach you physically. But I needed physical intervention that day.
Uh-huh.
So, you know, your question is really impossible to answer, because I've never had that experience, and I don't know what would have happened if I'd been in a different context.
Right.
But I trust Don Diego, and, you know, it's his opinion. You probably would not want to work with it on your own, because, you know, you might get into something that, you know, might be really hard to handle. So at this point, I feel personally no desire, but I wouldn't condemn someone else for working solo with it. I just think, again, that's a real cautionary example of, you know, you are playing with fire. And while I don't think you probably wouldn't die from it, you might suffer some kind of severe psychological trauma if you get into something so heavy that you're having trouble handling it on your own. Or if you're a sitter who is not really a shaman and can't, you know, energetically intervene, if they can't help you, then you could be in for a really rough ride.
It's especially risky if you've never done it before, too.
Yeah, I would. The only way I could even conceive of something contemplating that is if they were already very experienced and had done quite a few ceremonies with a shaman,
yeah,
where they've gotten some comfort level with ayahuasca. And even then, I don't know. So I'm, you know, having not done it, I'm probably the wrong person to ask. But my own feelings are, I can't say I would never do that, but I would be extraordinarily hesitant. And at this point in my journey, I don't think I would.
You'd also have to examine what your motivations and intentions are for doing it on your own versus doing it with a shaman.
Mm-hmm.
Because shamans these days, you know, they're it's very easy to go to South America now and to do these journeys. I should say also that there are shamans in the United States. So it's not like it's not like it was 20 years ago where this was not happening on a wide scale. It's happening now on a fairly wide scale.
Yeah. Yeah. One thing Don Diego said is that he says now ayahuasca wants to be everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's all part of that, you know, we need a zillion tools around the world right now to help people wake up faster because we are approaching some kind of event of spiritual awakening, and the more conscious we become and the faster we can get there, you know, the easier the transition will be, in my opinion.
Yes.
That's, if I can go on a slight tangent, that's, I got so many visions and experiences while I was doing the dieta in Peru with Don Diego. And I got this real potent vision the second night. I actually wrote about it in my astrology newsletter, which goes out to a bunch of people. And I said, okay, we are at this point, you know, and this was like early December when I saw this. It's like we are now balanced. The universe is holding its breath. The old age is ending, but the new age has not quite started. And we are, I truly believe, going to break through to a golden age no matter what. But how the transition works is up to us. I think the more people who can really embody universal love and compassion and really do good things for other people and do everything with a spirit of love and harmony and just behave in that way all around everything they do, the more people start doing that, the easier that transition is going to be. But if a large number of us continue to be selfish and greedy and we keep screwing up the planet and hurting other people, and really just having that whole look out for number one attitude, then we could have outcomes more like that 2012 movie where it's really horrific and tough.
Yeah.
So, you know, I just urged all my readers to really try to embody that high vibration the best they can, because then we'll all have an easier time of the transition we're moving into, which is already happening, by the way.
Yes.
Yeah.
Wanted to ask you now, Benjamin, about a little bit more about what a shaman is, or be more specifically, just talking about Don Diego, because he's an exceptional shaman. I think we can agree he has proven himself to be a person of very high character and a very highly evolved being who is sharing this sacred gift with humanity. I'm also aware that Don Diego is very much connected to India and the yoga tradition, and that he goes to India every year, and he studies with the teacher there. He's connected with the Shaivite tradition, which is the path that is connected with Lord Shiva.
Mm. Yeah, it surprised me.
Yeah, go ahead.
The first time, you know, I had worked with several different shamans with both ayahuasca and San Pedro, and it surprised me when I did his first ceremony and he started singing a Vedic chant.
Right.
Which, you know, I'd heard plenty of back in my days at the Lotus Center because Hinduism was a big part of what they did there, although it wasn't labeled as such. But there were lots of chants to Shiva and other, you know, Hindu gods. And when he started doing that, I thought, whoa, here's an outside-the-box shaman. Of course, Don Diego.
I heard that he's also been known to sing, like, you know, the Kermit the Frog the rainbow song from the first Muppet movie.
He sang that during the dieta, yes.
Okay.
That definitely lightens things up when he does that. He's got a good sense of humor. I mean, just to get a little perspective for those who haven't met him, he actually is Spanish. He was raised in Spain, and didn't even get into the whole shamanism thing until he was about 17. And he speaks pretty darn good English. I mean, there's some words he has to, you know, has to ask about, but he's very fluent in English and very well educated. I think he's got a higher university degree in pharmacobotany. Is an expert on medicinal plants. He works with God knows how many plants in the jungle. You know, he took us around on a little tour the last day of the dieta and showed us dozens of different plants that he's cultivating for medicinal use and can identify in the jungle. And the guy is really knowledgeable. And I would not hesitate to call him a Renaissance man. So, and he's young. He's only in his early 30s right now. So, and actually the other shaman I work with San Pedro is also in his early 30s. So, we have to get past the stereotype of the old bearded shaman. I mean, I think the universe is in a hurry right now to wake people up. So the shamans are able to now be more powerful at a younger age than they used to be.
Right.
So, I just wanted to give a little more sketch on him, to give a little perspective on the kind of man he is.
Yeah. And everyone could go to his website too, sachavacai.org.
Yeah, we should probably spell that. That's sachavacay.org. And it's a very, very thorough site too. He's got a whole video there you can watch, and very, very informative about not only ayahuasca in general, but also the way he does it in Peru.
Let's talk a little bit about the yoga tradition. I'm just curious because in the yoga tradition, from how I understand it, that the highest understanding of the divine is where we get to this understanding of oneness, of non-duality, which is sometimes referred to as Vedanta.
And it might be easier to, rather than say understanding of it, perhaps experience of it would be better.
That's experience,
because
because yoga is nothing if not about experience.
Yeah, it's something that really can't be understood. It can only be experienced, I think.
You know, it really is all about direct experience. And I think that is where sometimes religion will go astray, or let's say exoteric religion, which tends to be more about belief and ritual and following a dogma, etc.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas what we're talking about really is direct embodied experience of these things.
Yeah, don't tell me about it. I want to do it.
Right. Exactly.
If I can't experience it, I don't want to bother. Yeah.
I just saw a good movie last night. It's called Enlighten Up, and it's all about this guy who is going to see if, well, it's actually the filmmaker wants to see if this young journalist is going to be transformed by yoga in 6 months.
Huh.
And what I think, he's not transformed, and he even doesn't continue to do yoga after the movie's over. And I think what really is happened with him, and it may be true of a lot of people in yoga, is that they aren't given that direct experience. They don't have those kinds of direct experiences. And if they did, they would have a much better understanding of the whole process.
Hmm. Yeah, and
I think that was the case with me. Go ahead.
In the movie, was the young man really avid to do this, or was he just, you know, said, oh, you don't really care about yoga, but we're going to do this as an experiment so we can make a movie? I mean, how did it work that way?
He didn't have a strong desire to really, I mean, he wanted to know about yoga, but he didn't know what he was getting himself into, and yeah, it was a job for him. He was hired to be part of this film, and he got to go all over the world and meet some really interesting people. But,
yeah, that sounds like a friggin' reality show. I'm sorry.
You
know,
right.
And you know, for me, the spiritual path, when you're ready for it, you're called to it, and if you're, you know, force-fed it before you're ready, then you'll just end up resenting it and being resistant to it. So.
Exactly.
You know, I haven't seen the movie, but from what you described, it sounds more like a gimmick than a genuine exploration of what yoga is about.
Right.
Yeah.
But it's still worth seeing, I think. But in any case, I just wanted to make that little point about getting back to direct experience.
Yeah.
And what you just said is very, very important, is that there has to be an inner calling.
Yeah.
No one can lead you to this.
No.
You can be inspired by someone else, but really it has to come from within you, that you truly feel some kind of urge. It usually, I believe, it starts with some kind of malaise, some kind of dis-ease that you're feeling about life as it is, and you begin to seek something more than what you currently are experiencing in your life.
Yeah,
and
that's usually the case. Now I have a little bit different perspective. I'm a professional astrologer, and at this point I've done about 2,600 consultations. So I've talked with people with just an unimaginably wide range of experience, and what you say is generally true, but very often I have met some, maybe I shouldn't say very often, but some I've met who are just enthusiastically exploring these things because they're excited about it. There's no malaise, there's just, you know, excitement, and they tend to be the more Sagittarian types. Let me do a new quest now. I can't wait.
Right, right.
So, well, that is often true, but not always. So some people are just, you know, excited about exploring, and they just get after it. I'm probably a case in point that way myself.
Right. I have to say that for me, I really got going. Well, I came to all this from deep suffering as a teenager, and
uh-huh.
I think at the end of my teenage years, I had a very heart-opening experience. Excuse me, of unconditional love.
Mm, nice.
But that came at the tail end of some very rough years, and then I also, in my 20s, I went through quite a bit of existential suffering, asking, you know, went through a very troubled period of questioning. Feeling very, let's say, anxious about dying, and that was a very big part of my personal search and what I experienced.
I'd love to touch on those two themes when the time is right, on heart opening and dying, because I've got some interesting things to say about that if there's an opportunity.
Yeah, why don't we talk another 15 minutes, and then we'll come back again, because I'd love to continue all this. I don't think we could ever... I mean, we could continue this all night, actually.
Okay.
I'd like to talk about that right now, then. Would you like to go into talking about the experience of dying and opening the heart?
Yeah, because that... You know, that's one of the heart opening has been one of those profound benefits of my work with ayahuasca, especially this last dieta, just profoundly. You know, I've talked a lot about the dramatic things that happened, you know, the cleaning the entities out of me that the sorceress planted, and then facing this intense blackness, by the way, which did clear before the final ceremony. There was always a rest day after each ayahuasca ceremony. You do ayahuasca, then there's a day of rest between. And during that day, that blackness finally broke up and dissolved. And because by the end of that ceremony, it was still there. And I was wondering, oh my God, what's going to happen? We didn't get it this time, you know. And so Don Diego the next morning assured me that we would have that cleared out before the dieta was over. And in fact, it cleared that day before we even got to the next ceremony. But I want to talk a little bit about how I've changed since the dieta.
Okay.
Because one thing... I'm big on getting reality check. You know, I can perceive things about myself, but I've also learned that my perception might be skewed because I am the subjective observer of my life, and I like other people's opinions. So I have, you know, interacted a lot with other people who are also on very serious spiritual paths and are very sensitive to energy. and, you know, they've given me either solicited or unsolicited feedback on how I feel. And the interesting one of the comments that two different people have made who didn't know each other was, you feel safer now, which I think probably has to do with the fact that these entities aren't hanging out at me anymore. I don't know that I felt unsafe before, but, you know, that was a comment that was really interesting. And the other thing is I cry more easily at movies. I've become more sensitive, and my feminine side, the final ceremony I had was all about integrating my own divine feminine nature into me. It felt literally like a light body came in and was installed inside me, and it's now operating. And I am now, I truly feel that I'm behaving in a more compassionate, open-hearted, sensitive way than I ever have before. Astrologically speaking, I'm becoming more and more like a Pisces, which is not a strong energy in my chart to start with.
Well, I can mirror you on that and say that that's exactly what I feel from you. But I felt that from you before you did the dieta in Peru. But you'd already done plant medicine before that.
Oh yeah, and that's been one constant of the process. The good shamans will talk about that. You know, if you're hanging with a sorcerer, he'll talk about developing power. If you're working with a real high shaman, he'll talk about opening your heart, you know. And that's that. Not that they'll never talk about power, but that's the emphasis. The idea is getting open and genuine and real. And I have felt a really big difference in my sensitization and just be able to perceive more subtle things, perceive the divine nature in people more easily, to feel energy more powerfully on a more subtle level than I used to. It's really extraordinary to feel that increased sensitivity on the psychic and intuitive and energetic levels. So that's been a really significant and blatant side effect, I think, of the ayahuasca work, and a very good one.
Go ahead. Sorry.
Yeah, I also wanted to speak to the dying thing, because that was another extraordinary thing that happened on my Breakthrough Sunday. I died two or three times in that ceremony in vision. I mean, my physical body did not die, but that ceremony was where I was finally able to depart my physical body and be a pure point of consciousness in space. And in the vision, you know, the ayahuasca is nicknamed the Vine of Death, and many other nicknames too, but in that, one of the visions I had was of a giant snake, which is very often associated with ayahuasca, you know, biting me with its fangs and shooting the venom and the body dying. And at that point, I did not care. I was a pure point of consciousness. I said, if you need to kill Benjamin, I am so unconcerned with that, because I now get that that is not what I am. I am not Benjamin at all. I am not that body. I am pure consciousness. Interestingly, the thought process, the mental process, was exactly the same when I was outside the body as when I'm in it. So I think my experience of the consciousness exists totally independently of the brain. And then I had another vision where the body was like incinerated and burned to ash and sucked away by some kind of vacuum. And I didn't care about that either. I mean, I was so surrendered. And I say, Spirit, you know, I am totally yours. My life is in your hands. I completely trust ayahuasca as an agent of the divine will. And I truly, if my body had killed over and died, then I would not have cared. I said, okay, what's next? And I also perceive my own immortality, which is true for every person and everything. Nothing dies. Consciousness is permanent. Perhaps when the universe finally extinguishes, or, you know, pulls back into, or I don't know what the heck it's going to do, but, you know, perhaps when everything finally gets blended back together into one primordial soup again, where we're all just, maybe then individual consciousness will finally be, you know, all merged back into one divine consciousness, and all the individuation will be gone. But I think for a few billion more years yet, you know, I think that individual consciousness will be maintained. And at least for now, I'm able to really perceive that my consciousness will survive death, because I have perceive myself as, you know, unattached to the physical body, and it's so liberating. I can't tell you how wonderful it is to be free of the fear of death. Life becomes so much more vibrant. The Buddhists have a statement that you cannot really live until you have faced death. And that's why they have practices in India, like, you know, spending days watching bodies burn on funeral pyres out in their areas where they do that, to really get with the reality of that. And ayahuasca has allowed me to experience the death of my body in vision and get me to really feel like I'm not worried about that. And my death cannot come until it's the proper time.
Do you feel now that when it is time for your body to expire, that you will be able to consciously move in the spirit world to whatever your next incarnation, if you will incarnate again, how will that all, as far as you understand it or have experienced it even, could you talk about that a little bit?
Ah, man, that is so far beyond my field of knowledge. I have no idea what's going to happen, and I'm not the least bit worried about it. The way my life works now is I completely trust spirit. I now strive to operate as much as possible by what I'm calling divine GPS. My life literally most of the time is where spirit is just giving me turn-by-turn directions moment by moment. I am doing less thinking and planning and worrying than I've ever done in my life. And I truly believe the ayahuasca work has gotten me so much more tightly connected with my own intuition, where I'm little able to operate just on the moment as spirit guides me. I'm not saying I never make a decision just from Benjamin's personality, but it's so much rarer, and it's such a relief not to have to do all that mental work anymore, even though I'm perfectly capable. You know, I always got straight A's in school, and I'm a pretty smart guy, you know, by most people's standards. But, you know, to be able to operate, you know, it's like, okay, you can work from your limited left brain, and of course we know rationally we can justify any decision we want to make if we just convolute it enough and you know, twist it around sufficiently. But to be operating from the divine guidance, to have the source of all knowledge that can see the past, the present, the future, that knows why you're here, why the heck not take instructions from that? I mean, that's so much superior to just, you know, muddling around on your own, you know? So I truly feel like the ayahuasca work and the San Pedro work too. You know, they all blend together in the work, the help they've given me, have made my connection to my own intuition much, much stronger. And that's another profound benefit for me, is just being able to be so much more easily guided by my own divine essence.
Well, that might be a good place to stop for today. I wanted to thank you so much for sharing all that you did today.
Oh, it's my great pleasure.